You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello, welcome to Inside the Industry Unfiltered, a brand new podcast hosted by myself, Adam Smith. Delighted to be your host on this journey together, where we will be sitting down with some of the biggest names in the industry, and I'll be getting the inside information on just how they got to the top of their game. We'll be talking about the highs and the lows, and more importantly, some exclusive, never been told before stories. We're also going to have a laugh along the way. I hope you enjoy it. Our very first episode is with the one and only Jack Mate. Delighted to say on the podcast this week, a man who is quite simply everywhere. He's known as a YouTuber, a podcaster, big West Ham fan, of course, good mate of mine. It is Jack, mate. Jack, how you doing?
Oh, mate, I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no worries. Did I miss anything out on that intro?
Sexy.
Okay, sexy as well.
Went in there, although I have put on a bit of weight recently.
Looking well. You've critiqued yourself a couple of times, even before we started this pod. What are you not happy about?
The teeth.
No,
you like... You give me 50% off, but... pretty much put 50% on. They're massive. I'm happy. This is a pleasure to be here, Smithy. Always good to see you. This is looking nice.
Do you know what? It's one of my first questions because you have got one of the biggest pods. I've been lucky enough to be a guest on it. You're on our podcast. Critique the setup, the studio. What are your thoughts?
Mate, it's good. There's four cameras. We've only got three. So you got us on that. A little bit of greenery. Bring some life to our studio. Our studio is quite soulless, to be honest.
Okay.
So, this is looking nice. Ours looks like... a CBB set.
It's nice though. What I like about your set, it's very colourful, so it lifts your mood. As soon as you come in the door, you go, I feel happy, which is that part of the
well,
mindset?
I'm constantly miserable,
happier.
So I'm not too sure. I'm not really. I don't know why I started so negative. I'm looking forward to it, mate.
Mate, okay, let's get started. We start as we always do. Talking about your childhood, I want to dissect how you got into YouTube because your pathway is quite different, I think, to a lot of sort of your stereotypical YouTubers. So tell us a bit about your childhood and growing up and what that was like.
From a council estate in Norwich, pretty humble beginnings. Wanted to be a footballer, like everyone. Probably could have been, done the old knee. And everyone has said that.
It's always
point.
The knee as well, isn't it? It's never the hamstring, always the knee.
Or the fact that I'm just terrible at football.
But mainly the knee.
Yeah. But no, I just didn't have much money. Had a couple jobs before starting YouTube, but always wanted to, I was always showing off, always wanted to make people laugh. I know, again, it's such a cliche so early on, but I was just that sort of knobhead who was class clown. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So I was predicted good grades, didn't get them because I was too busy sort of pissing about and that. But
cheeky chappy.
Yeah, I probably thought I was funnier than I ever was.
Yeah, I was a bit like that, yeah.
Yeah, but when you grow up ginger in a council estate, you need to be able to laugh at yourself, otherwise you are going to fall to the bottom of that pecking order. It's sort of like eat or be eaten. So yeah, it was good fun growing up, just playing football, manhunt over the park, all that normal stuff. Home life was all right. Sort of fell out with my mum about 15, and then that was kind of like fight or flight.
That's
what I'm looking for. It's kind of that was the moment when I really started to pursue YouTube and this world that I'm now in, which at the time wasn't a world.
Yeah,
you know,
good point.
I mean.
And when you came into it, can I ask you a bit about that? You said about your relationship with your mum and at 15. How difficult was that? Because you're still at a very, well, developmental age, I suppose, there as a teenager. Very, very difficult being that age anyway with everything going on. So how tough was that period? And what is your relationship like with your mum now?
It was weird. So I don't speak to her now.
At all?
No, she'll drop like the odd text message.
Yeah.
I have, like, so she's an alcoholic and... she'll text me at midnight on a Saturday. And right. I was like, don't really want to text then. Text me at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday,
right,
if you know what I mean, if you read between the lines. So haven't really got much time for that. Up until I was about 15, 16, perfect mum. Mm. Like, I never needed anything, like, gave me everything I wanted, like, was absolutely perfect. Then I think the drinking just got a bit too bad. Mm. And that's when our relationship broke down. And then she kicked me out when I was about 17, something like that. And that's when it all started to go good.
Really?
So, yeah, because...
just ironically, or do you actually see a correlation?
No, definitely a correlation, because my uncle took me in. And I don't think he'll mind me saying, because he's in a much better place now, but big alcoholic as well.
Really?
Not the best living conditions. He had a box room upstairs, said you can have that.
Yeah.
So I went there, and it weren't the best living conditions. Obviously, I appreciated what he did for me, but it was not a nice environment to live in. Don't get me wrong, I was out of the hostile at home, so I had my own space in that, and I probably had a lot more than most people have, but wasn't enjoyable. And I was in this room, and I thought to myself, I need to make something of myself. And I've always backed myself. I've always had confidence. Mm. That I've always thought of myself to be a funny person. I can sort of chat to anyone in any situation. So I was like, look, you want to be a YouTuber? I've been doing it on and off for about 2 years. This is now the time to do it. Mm. And I've told this story before, but it might sound a bit cheesy, but the best thing I ever bought was a whiteboard.
To this date?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Because I was on another podcast, and I got asked that question, and that came to me, and I thought about the question more after I'd said it. And yeah, I can't stress enough, I bought a whiteboard, and the reason that was so important is because I never ever took YouTube serious. It was just a hobby. Mm. And then I sat in this room at my uncle's house, and I bought this huge whiteboard off Amazon, a bit too big, that I screwed screwed into the wall, divided it up into 30 squares for the month.
It and was I just, a big one then, 30 yeah, squares, yeah.
Massive, mate. Big old squares as well, literally. Too big. But I divided it up into a calendar, and I just made sure that I just had a schedule and upload every single week, two or three times a week, every single day on the same day. I had a year, I can't remember what year it was, I'm terrible with dates, but at a certain year where I said, I'm going to say yes to everything. Mm. Anything that hit my inbox, I'm saying yes to. I was coming to London and doing, like, this is when I was first starting, and I was doing interviews with people I didn't know who they were.
Really?
I was going to events I didn't know what I was doing there.
What was the mindset behind that? Just because you wanted to make it, so you were just going to any opportunity you could get your hands on?
100% that. And yeah, the dream was just to be a YouTuber. So you need your face out there. You need to be, you never know who you're going to meet. So I'd find myself in some strange situations, but always positive. Like, I never went to an event and thought, it might have been boring, but I never thought, I wish I didn't go.
Do you know what I mean? You never know what comes with it in networking.
Yeah, or what you're going to learn.
How important is that, have you found in your career, like the networking aspect and meeting other YouTubers, but also like brands and PR people? Has that been a really important part of where you are now, do you think?
Yeah, I reckon so. It's tough, because one of my proudest things is that I've been able to make a career without necessarily befriending all the other YouTubers.
Yeah.
I'm very much an outsider in that respect. Mm. And I wear that like a badge of honor. Like, because I always wanted to be a YouTuber. I went to an event called Summer in the City that they used to do, where loads of YouTubers go and you'd meet them. And I remember I went there, and I was like, I probably had about 10,000 subscribers. There might have been 30 people there that went because of me. And all these YouTubers, and I'm sure they're different now, and I had loads of them on my podcast, and there's a lot of great people out there.
Yeah.
But at the time, they were all in the VIP room upstairs, staying up there all day, just networking. So, which I get, they're at the start of their careers as well. Some of them were already flying. But no one was downstairs. No one was downstairs meeting the people that had paid to go there. And I would go up to these YouTubers who I idolized. I'm not afraid to say I idolized them.
Yeah.
And the first thing they would say to me is, how many subscribers you got?
Yeah.
How much money are you making?
Before they said, how are you? What's your name and all that?
And I was like, and then, because I didn't have many subscribers, you'd notice a change in their reaction.
Yeah.
And so, of course, it's a great way to grow. And any person out there who's starting in the content game, you have to collaborate. You have to do it. And in many ways, I did that by using their names in sort of more negative light.
Yeah,
so I can't exactly act like I'm above that. But I never changed who I was to make them like me. And I'm glad, like now with my podcast that I've got going on, I've managed to make my friends and my network, such as Robbie Knox already had his own lane, but Stevie White, he's one of my best mates, worked in Boots, Alfie Indra, just the guy that I met in Norwich. They're just my mates.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, actually. I know what you mean. A lot of podcasts or YouTube series, it'll be two YouTubers collaborating with each other, for instance. But like to your point, Stevie was just doing a normal job in Boots. He wasn't a YouTuber prior to Happy Hour, was he? You got him involved because he's a mate from home, right?
Yeah, because you need someone you're going to connect with. You need someone that's authentic. I'll give a shout out to I'm Alex as well, because he started the podcast with me. I had the idea. I called him up, said, do you want to do it? And although things didn't work out in that aspect, the show... He brought an element to the show that I didn't really want it to be. He was like a drama YouTuber years after I'd kind of left that behind, and we were going down that route. I didn't really want it, but I owe him a lot because he brought a large chunk of audience to it.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I'd be here today if it wasn't for him helping me at the start. So you do need to collaborate, but I find, or I did at the start, because my opinions on YouTubers has changed a lot recently because I'm not really in that world anymore, if that makes sense. I know I have them on my pod, but I'm not a YouTuber. I don't go to these YouTube events. But what was I going to say? So I used to feel that a lot of YouTubers would change and just be friends with other big YouTubers because they're going to grow. And I've got no time. I just can't be arsed, mate, to put up that facade.
Do you know what? I've known you for a while, actually. And I do know that about you. I can tell that you're quite a normal bloke at heart, really. And the fact that you still... I mean, you still go to Norwich with your mates back home, and which is great. And you've got mates in YouTube and you've got mates from home, which I think is great. I want to talk about... come on to the podcast, actually, because obviously you're smashing it with your own podcast. It's a brilliant listen. But before that, let's start as it started, when you became a YouTuber. Talk to me about... you bought the whiteboard, the first videos, the hustle that went into it, because people see you now as successful, but tell me about the early days and actually what went into that, how many people you had involved, like what was the day-to-day?
Me and my sister used to argue over use of the computer at my mum's house, and we'd only get a certain amount of time every day. And I started watching these YouTubers, and I watched somebody called Charlie Is So Cool Like, and what she did was count these... It's mad, but this was the world back then.
Yeah.
She would buy like these packs of wine gums
and
just do tests to see how many colours you get in each one, right?
Yeah.
And it's dog shit content, right? Yeah. But that was how authentic and just silly YouTube was back in the day. It was that was the reason that like you is in the word YouTube, because it was just do you, like just broadcast yourself. And I thought I can probably do that.
You definitely can.
I can count wine gums. And I used to watch, I used to watch a duo called Jack and Dean. My name's Jack Dean. But so I think I found them just by searching my own name on YouTube.
What they said about me.
Yeah. and they did like comedy skits and stuff like that. So I started doing that, and I'd have to go, if my sister had the computer, I'd go around my nan's because she had a computer and a webcam. I just started filming myself on the webcam. Mm. And then the cringiest videos you'll ever see. But everyone's first video will be the cringiest video you'll ever see. Because if you don't look back on your first video and cringe, you've not gone anywhere.
100%. And also you look back at any, like I look back at the first interviews I've done and I'm like, oh, wow, compared to what I'm like now, I'm not saying I'm the perfect article by any stretch of imagination.
You're pretty close.
But thanks, I appreciate that. But everyone looks back at the first thing they do.
Mm.
And that's a really important message, I think, for this, because obviously the purpose of this podcast is to inspire people to get into the industry. And it's that don't be put off if your first video, you think, I can't do this, because you felt that like that, I felt like that. And I speak to so many people who say, oh my word, looking back at the first thing I ever did.
Yeah.
You're only going to get better.
That's a good feeling.
Yeah.
That's a good feeling, because then that shows your progression. That shows what you've learned and how much better you've got. But so I was doing these stupid videos. Excuse me.
Like what? Go on, give us an example.
So I did, it's not rude, but it sounds rude. It was 5 things you can do with a banana.
Okay.
Don't know why. I think a YouTuber I watched did 5 things you can do with a Nintendo Wii remote. And I thought I can parody that.
he's not done banana yet. Oh, he's done pear.
Gap in the market.
Yeah.
So I did that. I was lip syncing songs.
Yeah.
Weird stuff.
So you were just doing anything because you wanted to be a YouTuber, and you were gauging how many, what sort of views were you getting at this time?
20. Like, and there'd just be people at my school. Like, I was playing for a football team called Furside.
Yeah, tough place to go.
they would rip me.
Really?
Like, yeah, people at school.
He's got a banana again. Hi.
Yeah, mate, they used to come up to me and go, what can you do with a banana? Yeah. And that I go to sleep at night and that's ingrained, dude.
Yeah.
And then so I was doing that, and I at school I thought it was funny and stuff. And then I went to college, and because people would give me shit at school, when I went to college, I went, I'm not going to tell anyone because it's not popping off. So no one will know unless I tell them.
Yeah.
And I kept making these videos and I started to, I remember my granddad, who's one of my best mates.
Yeah.
I went round there and he went, he had this newspaper, and this is just not funny, but he went, look at this, you buy a newspaper, you get a free can of Spam. And I went, right? And then he went, well, yeah, that's why I bought it. I got loads in the cupboard though. I went, so you've already got loads of Spam, but you've bought this because of that.
To get and, more Spam.
So I did a video talking about this.
Yeah.
And people really liked it. And it weren't, but it was almost like in the format of like stand-up comedy, like talking to the camera. I wrote a few little jokes. And
yeah,
that.
I know what you mean.
And
yeah,
so that I started to find a little bit of traction with that.
Yeah, like Russell Howard sort of does that, doesn't he? Reacts
Yeah. And I did a video called 25 Things Everybody Hates. Yeah. And I just wrote relatable things. And I went to college, and I'd gone from being this like stupid clown who wanted people to like him at school, realised that affected my grades. So I went to college, I knuckled down. I was very much like a nerdy guy, right? And I just had my couple of mates who were also nerdy guys, and we just were in the corner, and we just got our work done. And I remember one day I went to college, and they all had my videos up on the screen.
Wow.
And my heart...
So how old would you have been here?
I was probably about 18, 19.
And you're getting how many sort of views? It's
Well, this is the thing. I weren't getting any views.
Right.
And then I thought, how has this happened?
Yeah.
Like, how have they found them? And then I went in, and I realised I'd been featured on the YouTube homepage.
Wow.
So it was like the best and the worst, because it was like, my college mates now know what I do.
Interesting.
And I'm not too confident about what I do. Yeah. But also, this is my dream. This is what I wanted to happen. So it was like a double-edged sword sort of thing. But I made videos for 7 years without earning a penny.
Wow.
7 years.
I know that I've heard you say it was a long grind. I didn't realize it was that amount of time.
Don't get me wrong. Like, when I say without earning a penny, I don't mean that literally. I just mean like I didn't earn a wage. Like, there may have been a time when I'd have hit... back in the day, you had to get £60. That was the threshold for YouTube to pay you out. I might have had like two or three of them.
But you weren't earning enough to justify what you were doing. It was completely a passion project.
Yeah.
Were you doing that for 7 years then? The back end of that, you must have left college and stuff. Were you doing other jobs? What sort of jobs were you doing whilst you were... doing YouTube? Because how are you funding that?
So I didn't really have to fund it because I was just living at my mum's, filming on a webcam that she had. But I was filming, I'd worked with my granddad a lot. So I was worked on like a pig farm. And he says this now, like, I remember one time we were doing, we were putting up this, see, this is how much I know about it, but like this roof, right? Yeah. And I was stood there.
Bendy roof. And then did that.
And I was stood there, and it was in the middle of summer. All my mates were at the pool, had gone swimming, and I was there with my granddad. And I love him to bits. I did not want to be there. And these pigs were just covered in shit, basically.
Yeah.
And these flies were around me. I thought, I can't do it. And my granddad brings this up to this day. When I looked at you and went, you ain't made for it. You're not made for it.
You're not made for it.
So that was probably another thing that made me think, like, I want to do something other than this.
Yeah.
So I had a job at Bella. I worked at Bella Italia. For about 9 months. But that was at the...
I don't know why I said Bella Italia. The Italian restaurant, Italian gives it away, Smithy, I'd like to cut out. They'll definitely keep that in. the Italian
Make
restaurant.
Make sure you
yeah.
keep that in, please.
Then he went to an Argentinian steakhouse. The Argentinian, yeah? So sorry, you work at Bella Italia.
Working at Bella Italia. But that was when my YouTube channel had started to pop off a bit.
Right.
So my cousin was like boss man there. So he got me a job, and I was working there, but people would recognize me. And so on my first couple of shifts, I remember I was taking this bit of, taking this dessert over to someone, and this bloke's daughter recognized me and gone, oh, Jack, mate, and had a photo.
Quality.
And there was this cream in this little saucer thing, this little pot. And I thought the cream was like whipped cream, but it was like milk.
Right.
So I've gone to put it down on the table with a bit of force, and I've just thrown cream over this family.
Right.
And she was like, oh, Jack, mate. And I think she thought I was doing it as a bit of a prank. Like, oh, I'm a YouTuber.
You got away with it because they knew you were.
Yeah, but he weren't too happy.
Right. And then, didn't know you were.
And then so I kind of thought, like, I'm not too sure how much longer I can do this, because people are asking me for photos. It's getting a bit weird.
Yeah.
I'm pissing people off. Like, so then I left. But yeah, I think it was, I started to get a little bit of a following. I was getting about 30K views a video. I'd basically worked it out that if I'd uploaded two times a week, for for the month, so yeah. 8 uploads, I'm 30k views, it can cover my rent.
Yeah, okay.
That's my money that
so you would look at it like that. You wouldn't look at it, I've got an idea for a video. You'd go, I need to make X amount of money to carry on doing this.
Not at the start, because obviously I didn't know you could make money. Yeah. But once I started to get a little bit of traction, and Facebook was mad for that at the start. Yeah. Putting, that was all I wanted. I just wanted to pay. I never wanted to be rich. I don't care about money. Yeah. Like, but that was the catalyst. Like, if I can pay my rent, I can carry on just doing this. And and then fast forwarding quite a bit there, but in 2017 I made a video where I took the piss out of Zoella's
advent calendar. Yeah.
So she was a popular YouTuber back in the day. She brought out an advent calendar.
I think we've all seen it. Yeah. A lot of views though. I mean, that would you say looking back on it that is the moment
that changed everything? That changed
everything for you.
Everything, because again, this sounds like I'm making this up. This sounds like too poetic to be real, but this is true. Like. Jimmy Conrad, who I'm sure you know, he came on my podcast about October 2017. I was doing a podcast with my mate Tom Norris at the YouTube Space. We'd had a handful of guests, but it wasn't popping off. We'd had Eddie Hearn on there, like we'd had good guests, but it wasn't popping off. I had Jimmy Conrad on there, who I love the guy. Like, he's had a great career.
Yeah,
he came on. He spoke about scoring for America in the World Cup.
Yeah.
And then I posted the video and it got like 9k views. And I remember I was in this pub in Norwich. I was like, shit. I was like, I can't, it's not sustainable. Mm. I can't keep it up. So I stopped uploading for about 3 weeks. And then I did this Zoella advent calendar video. And it was £50, this advent calendar. Mm. And I remember thinking, fucking hell, like that is madness. Mm. There's only 12 doors in it as well. So is that really an advent calendar? I'm still hung
you
up on it.
You have 24 doors, haven't you?
Yeah, surely. I know.
Yeah.
And so I bought this calendar and this is
and this is true. You actually paid £50 of your own money for this, didn't you?
And honestly,
yeah.
I didn't know if I could afford it. I thought this was 50 quid that I could just be pissing up the wall. Don't know if you can swear on here or not, but and so I bought this calendar and I reviewed it in the same style that she would review products, like a beauty blogger. I edited it. I thought it was really funny. And I didn't post it because I was worried about, can I get sued for this? Like, I don't know.
Oh, wow.
And I was in the pub and this was like early November time. And I was in the pub with my mates and I had a few jars. And I never show my mates my videos because I can come to London, do the coolest thing ever, go back to Norwich, go, oh, I was just with Ricky Gervais. Go, we don't care, you knobhead. Get around it, right? But I showed them this video. I was like, what do you think of that? And they were cracking up and they were like, that's funny, mate. You should post it. So after a few more beers, I've posted it. I woke up the next day for Sunday League football.
Yeah.
I was at the McDonald's drive-thru.
Yeah.
I was waiting for my food and I checked my phone because I wasn't even checking the views on it because I just didn't, I've fallen off. I don't care. Yeah. I checked the views at 250,000 views.
Wow.
I remember sitting there like shaking, like, what the hell's going on? Went to football, checked my phone, 400K.
Yeah.
That night I've got newspapers or radio shows calling. Amazing. I was like, what the hell? So that got about 1 million views in like 2 days.
Which is incredible, by the way.
For a channel that had no subscribers.
Yeah, I was going to say,
And then so I did every YouTuber will say the same. If you get a banger video, follow it up.
Yeah.
Like, just rinse and repeat.
Same with a banger, yeah.
So I made
easier
my own.
Easier said than done, though, that, isn't it?
Yeah, you just need an idea that's similar, but enough to be a different video.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was at the McDonald's drive-thru, and I just checked my phone, because I wasn't even checking the views, because I just thought it was going to be dog shit, basically. Checked the views, and they had 250,000 views from the night I'd posted it previously. I started shaking at the drive-thru. I was like, this is crazy. And then played Sunday League, checked after, probably about 400K.
Yeah.
And then that evening, I had newspapers, I had local radio stations calling me up, wanting to know about this advent calendar. The next day, Boots slashed the price in half to 50,
was that the next day, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 50%
and
off.
And that was solely because of your review, you think?
They said it was on sale, but because of the negative, there was so much backlash to that £50. Because in one of the doors you got a pen,
right?
In the other door you got the pencil case. Didn't even put them in the same door. and one was a ball of fluff.
Pencil case is quite good, to be fair.
It's not too bad.
Sorry, I'm not sticking up for the advent calendar here.
One of the doors was a ball of fluff with a little key ring.
Right, okay.
Yeah. But
I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. Still banging on that 6 years later. But so yeah, that then I think it got a couple million views in that week. My granddad came to mine. because all YouTubers will know, if you do one successful video, always follow it up with a similar one. Just
but that's hard though, isn't it? I know you say produce a banger, another banger, and then you're onto something, but that's easier said than done to do a video that gets a million and then another video that gets a million.
But if you put, because it's relevant and it's hot, just do a similar thing, right, okay. And then people go, we want to see that again.
Yeah, and that's what they know you for, so that's your content, yeah.
So I made my own calendar after that, and with 12 with...
Yeah, I remember it.
I think I did 11 doors or something like that.
Ironically, it was 60 quid.
And so my granddad came to mine, and I've never seen anything like it, even to this day. I've not seen growth like it. We sat down in front of my computer, and I got Social Blade up with my live YouTube subscriber account on, and we just watched the numbers go up.
How long for? You just sat there?
We probably sat there for about 20 minutes.
And your granddad, by the way, is one of your best mates.
Yeah,
like,
I love him to
bits. You've got a tattoo of him on you? Like, he's...
Yeah, he's the...
A huge part of your life.
It was a good tattoo at the start, but I picked the eyes, and it's made him look blind now. But
talk to me about that moment then. So you're with one of your closest family members. You're sat there, you're watching your career take off. For how long were you watching
probably
the numbers?
Probably about half an hour, a cup of tea.
How wholesome was that moment?
It was incredible, because he's always been like number one fan. He's, to this day, he reads every single
Does
comment. He watches every video, listens to every podcast.
Does he? Because he's not the demographic of your audience, which is an obvious thing to say. He just does that because he's so proud of you, presumably.
Yeah, he now learns about it because of me. Like, he's a West Ham fan now because of me. Like, because I work with West Ham now. Yeah. That's when he started to take an interest. But he'll call me up and he'll go, he'll sometimes get it wrong, but he'll go like, Jake Paul's fighting KFI on the
what a legend,
because he just follows all the pages.
Yeah,
but that was a great moment, and I think, again, I could get the numbers wrong because it's so long ago now, but it was something as drastic as going from like 300k subscribers or 100k to 500k.
Wow.
I think I got 300,000 subscribers in the first week, and then that was in the November, and then December the 30th of that year I hit a million subscribers.
Wow.
And that was my dream.
Can I just pick you up on something? You said that you've never seen growth like it, which is obviously, that's quite rare, isn't it? It's usually that it's easier to grow once you gain a bit of a following. So you're saying even once you hit a million, your growth was slower than that Zoella advent calendar vid. That's the quickest you've ever seen growth.
Yeah, I've had videos that have surpassed that now.
Yeah.
But never had videos that translated to subscribers.
As quick as that.
Yeah.
And do you think it's fair to say, had you not have shown your mates that video, you'd have never uploaded that?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Wow.
Or had I not had a few jars and felt a bit confident.
So what would have happened if you had you not uploaded that? You genuinely think you might have jacked it in?
I back myself to say I would have been doing something entertainery, if you know what I mean, but not to the level that I'm so lucky to do now.
Yeah. Right?
That was the video that changed it all. But that came with its downsides as well, though, because... Well. Then I got pigeonholed into being that guy that slags off YouTubers.
Yeah.
And although I learned along the way that I would only call people out for what I believe to be the right reasons, there were times when I called people out because I knew it would pay the rent.
Really?
Yeah, and I knew I'd earn a few quid off it. Because people were like, this YouTuber's done this, this YouTuber's done that. So
people would actually message you saying, what about this person, really?
There's this German YouTuber I've never heard of, who's like, 10k subscribers, but they've just done this to their audience, and 99% of the time they were doing something wrong.
But your audience wanted you to react to that, because that was what they saw you as, your USP.
And I would do it, but I don't feel guilty for it, because like I say, it was for reasons that I genuinely believed that they should be called out. But the only thing I do feel guilty about is it wasn't too authentic. I remember towards the end of me doing main channel videos, I would like sit there, I'd go, so Ella's got this cooking book like that, and try and pick out some flaws in it when it was just a fine cooking book.
Right.
And I'd be animated, and I'd be like this jackmate kind of heightened version of myself, and then I'd turn the camera off and be like, I don't give a shit about any of that.
So looking back on that, do you regret some of those vids you did, or some, was it, you're saying there you weren't authentic?
Yeah.
On some of them. So do you regret some of those or not? Or did you need to do that to build your profile at the time, do you think?
I don't think I regret it. That seems like too strong a word, but I do feel slightly embarrassed by some of them.
Do you?
Yeah, because I'm not squeaky clean myself. Mm. Like, we all make mistakes. Like, so I did feel a bit mightier than thou sometimes, and like, oh, like, this YouTuber's done this YouTuber's done that. I think I look back and probably 80% of them I'm happy with, and then the other 20 probably I've gone, they didn't really do
fair
anything.
Enough. Yeah. How did your life change after that moment, would you say? I mean, was it then that, imagine financially, you was, does it get to a point where you go, well, I can invest in cameras now, I can invest in an editor. Is it, does it change the game for you in terms of actually taking it, not taking it, you weren't taking it seriously before, but you can put time, effort and money into growing as a YouTuber?
Yeah, 100%. Like, invest in new cameras, invest in this, invest in that. But the biggest thing that money's ever given me is just freedom to be able to do what I like.
Right.
So people say to me now, why don't you do main channel videos anymore? Mm. Like, oh, you got the Spotify deal for your podcast and now you don't do main channel videos. Exactly. Because now I get to do what I want to do, what I have a genuine passion for. You will get a 2 podcasts from me every single week and I will put my heart and soul into them. I will, like, I care about this product. Like, if it goes to shit and I lose everything, I might be getting the old camera back out again. Do you know what I mean?
Like, it's a question you get asked a lot though, isn't it? Because you've got, what, 1.4 mil subscribers on YouTube, something like that. And you don't upload as much because of the pod, which we're coming to talk about. So is that just a mindset that you've had where your interests have gone into the podcast completely? Or do you think you will resurrect YouTube at a time? Is it just a case of balancing time?
I've got the time to do it. I've got the time to do it, but it's just like, as I've got older, I care less and less about YouTube drama. And that used to be the thing that I had nailed on.
I
knew everything about everything. My most recent videos I did on that channel was me and my friend Alfie Indra. We would do comedy skits and video essays about people. So we did one on like Jeremy Lynch from the F2 Freestylers. People out there know what all the controversy around that and the Stephen Chai thing. I don't need to go into it.
Yeah.
But I did a comedy sketch about that, right? And I can say I'm not a big fan of the guy, right? As people can have their opinions, that's fine. And we did a really funny video that I think was for all the right reasons. And the YouTube community, you'd be surprised who DM me going, I love that video. People really? Who I wouldn't thought would ever go near it. But then there is a bit where you go like, right, he could be one of the worst people ever. Let's say this, he could be. But he's still got a head. Like, what is he?
Yeah.
What is he thinking, right? And if anything bad was to ever happen, right, then my comedy sketch, I would feel so guilty. So do you know what I'm trying to say?
Don't
want to get too deep. But as I've got older, I thought, right, it's funny to like poke fun at people and stuff like that.
But you don't know what they're going through.
You don't know what they're going through.
I totally agree with that.
And I've been in some real low places and stuff. Mm. Like, I'm very lucky. I wouldn't say I've ever had depression, but I've been in some states, basically.
Yeah.
And football Twitter and that have been giving me shit on Twitter. And I've bitten back in that, because I'm going through other stuff in my life.
Yeah, that they don't know about.
Yeah. So I just felt like too much of a social conscience after a while. Too much of a conscience to be picking up on what Jeremy Lynch said to Stephen Tries at the Wembley Cup.
Yeah, interesting. So it's interesting looking at how you develop that. Do you mind us talking about some of that? Because obviously I talk quite openly, but I've had my own battles with mental health in the past. I know that you've spoken about that. You suffer from OCD and health anxiety.
Yeah.
Is that right? Can you just explain a bit about what both are for those? Because I think it's important to educate people who might not know exactly what they are.
Yeah.
And also how that affects you in day-to-day life.
So health anxiety is just an offshoot of OCD. Obsessive compulsive disorder, which I found out probably about 13 or 14 years old that I have. It's when you obsess over things that essentially aren't real. So with my health anxiety, probably about 10 times a day, I'll go through these little moments in my head in which I sort of float away and believe that I've got a terminal illness. Mine's
about 10 times a day?
Yeah, quite probably more than that, really. Wow. At the time of recording this, I'm actually doing quite good, but that fluctuates. But so where I think it stems from is, so I started doing therapy last year and had a great therapist, and we got to the bottom of a lot of stuff. Now, obviously the relationship with my mum, that probably don't need to go over again, but my granddad, who we've spoken about, he got quite ill. He got septicemia. He was in a car accident and his leg got infected. And I got home from school one day and my mum said, oh, your granddad's ill, he's in hospital. So I just went in this zombie-like state where I just walked to the hospital because I didn't know what to do. Got back that, see him, he went in a good way. Got back home that night, had a photo of me and him in my room holding me as a baby. And I went and I kissed it 13 times. My lucky number's 13.
Right.
Don't know why. And I kissed it 13 times and I woke up and it was as if by magic that he was better. Like, it was probably over the space of a few days, but it felt pretty quick.
Yeah.
And then something triggered in my brain and I was like, it's because of that. It's because of that.
Really?
It's because I did that.
Yeah.
So I then had to do everything 13 times. I couldn't stay at my mate's house at school because I couldn't kiss the photo. Because if I don't kiss the photo, my granddad's going to die in my head.
Yeah.
And that's the, and then when I was probably about 15, I found a lump on my testicles. That freaked me out. This was about 10 p.m. at night, so I couldn't get to the doctors until the next day. And I remember the fear that I had for that night. I didn't sleep. I was like, I've got cancer. I'm going to die. And I think in that moment, that triggered me. That was the start of it. I had to go 12 hours just believing that I had this illness and that I was going to die. I was crying and all this stuff. And I went to the doctors. Doctor checked it out, said it was a cyst. Fine. But something changed in me that day. And I was like, from that moment on, I then have this like extreme health anxiety. But if I can just say quickly on the topic, I did Diary of a CEO with Steve Bartlett a year or so ago, and I spoke about this for the first time publicly because I've also had like, not issues, but I've also like, I would drink quite a lot at some points because it would be too much in my head. And I'd find that when I'd get pissed with my mates, I'd forget about it. And, and that would be such a relief. It would come back twice as bad the next day, but you don't worry about that in the moment.
Yeah,
but what I will just say that I haven't really put out there, Three weeks ago, I went to the toilet and there was a lot of blood in the toilet bowl. And for someone who has health anxiety, that is the worst feeling. It's probably not a nice feeling for anyone.
Yeah.
But that was that sent me. I've been in such a positive headspace this year, and I've been absolutely flying in my social life and everything. I've been so happy, and that sent me. And I come out of the toilet and I was white as a ghost and I thought I was going to faint. And Fiona knew something was up and I said, look, this has happened. She went, you've got to go doctors. Because something I haven't mentioned, but I then had from that early time again to doctors, I can't go doctors.
Right, because that triggers you again.
Yeah, I can't go.
Okay.
If it's for anything, like I went to the hospital in December because I smashed my ear in a football game and it blew up, right? I could go because I knew that's not going to be cancer. There's no way that can be. But if it's anything like, oh, I got a toothache, I think, is that gum disease? Have I got gum cancer? Is that
right? Okay.
So I remember I come out the toilet 3 weeks ago, three, 4 weeks ago, and I told Fiona this. She said, you've got to go. I said, so I can't call him. I can't make that appointment. And she's always pleading with me to go and stuff. And I said, if you can make the appointment, I'll go. And so she made the appointment and I went and had an exam and had to send a stool sample away and stuff. And I was terrified the whole week. And I played it down to my mates, like, I'm good. But in my head, I was losing my shit. That's excuse the pun.
Wrong pun at the wrong time, but I know what you're saying, yeah.
And then a week or so ago, I got the call and they said it's all fine. And good. Then they said, yeah. And I don't know, but touch wood, that has helped me so much in my head. Not just the fact that I'm all right in that aspect, but that is like a weight lifted now. That is like
for other stuff, going
other
forward.
Stuff. That is like confirmation that like shit. If you do just go and get tested, or you do have a worry, or you do find a lump down there, or wherever, I think I can do it now. I think I can tackle it. I think I can go to the doctors. I can get that confirmation. Because my worry was always, if I go and I have a test, they're going to tell me that you've got six mumps.
So you'd rather avoid going in
I'd rather just die then. Peter out, which is insane, right? And I don't mean to use that word to be crass, right? I'm just using it flippantly. But that was such a weight lifted. So anyone out there with health anxiety and stuff, I know how hard it is to go and break down that barrier. I used to say to Fee, it's like when the shops close at night and they shut down that barrier. It's like getting that barrier open is impossible.
Yeah.
But if you can just get a crowbar under it and lift that barrier up, like I'm walking on clouds now. Like I'm got such a new, like I'm buzzing.
And
like,
that's because you went. I think that's great advice for people that people listen to this. Surely, I imagine that have health anxiety that might have similar issues that you have, not wanting to go. But that's great that you said that. I hope other people can take that on board. And if they do have something, always best to get it checked out.
100%. And the final thing I would just quickly say, if you don't mind, is and just because I was able to do that, doesn't mean it's fixed everything. Like my thing is still like testicles and whatnot. Like that's my main crux, my main health anxiety. And if
is that because of the lump that you found?
Yeah,
so that still triggers.
Yeah, I struggle to touch that area of my body
at all.
Yeah, it's strange. I heard Carl Pilkington say that on an old Ricky Gervais XFM podcast, and they laughed at him. Right, it was a different world back then. I don't think they meant anything by it.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were like, that's crazy, Carl. Right. And I related to that so much. I was like, that is me. Now, because I sorted the other issue out, I'm still not completely there in terms of that aspect. So I'm not just saying like, look at me, I'm fixed. Yeah. I still have the issues. But if I can do that first step that will eventually go on to help me sort it all out, then these guys can do it as well.
Mate, it's amazing you talk like that, because I can't relate to any of that in terms of a condition, but I'm a type 1 diabetic, and it's like I had huge issues with mental health and anxiety at the time of diagnosis and for the few years after, and I wasn't telling anyone, injecting in private, all the worst things you can do when your blood sugar fluctuates daily like mine does. I'm in such a good place now because I opened up, because I talk to people, because I do stuff with charities, and I'm standing on stage talking about it. But it doesn't mean you don't have bad days.
No,
at all. And I think that's what you're saying, health anxiety, you've still got that, and people still need to understand that, because people say to me, oh, you're fine now, right, all sorted. It's like, well, not for the rest of my life. I just happen to be in a good place today. So I can relate to that massively. I wanted to ask you how you you've been very honest and open talking about those conditions. I think that's going to help a lot of people as well. So firstly, thank you for talking like that. How do you deal with doing what you do and being in the public eye, not just being in the public eye, but being in the public eye where you can literally see what people are saying about you in the comments section, with health anxiety, with OCD, and with the battles you've had with your mental health? Is that triggering for you, or does that work the other way because it's your passion, you can actually focus on things? Because it must be quite difficult.
I get a lot of shit because I give a lot of shit out.
Yeah.
So like, I can only expect it the other way, but like banter or whatever. It used to get to me a bit, but like I said, being a ginger kid from a council estate, you learn to get thick skin early on. So if most of the things people say about me, like I genuinely do find it funny. Like, oh, your teeth are too big or whatever. Like I've heard it all.
Yeah.
Right? So there's nothing you can say that is going to get under my skin.
It's interesting though, because you've mentioned your teeth, your hair colour a few times now. It's almost like you've created this barrier where, well, if I take the piss out of myself first, no one will take the piss out of me.
That's the best defence. Yeah, if you get in there before they can, simple as that. So yeah, I remember like, the times when it has affected me is when I kind of like believe it a bit. So if someone goes, you're not funny, I think, well, I think I am, so it don't matter. But like when I got with Fiona, like my fiance, when I got with her 8 years ago, I used to think she was way too good for me, and I still think that now. I would get comments like, oh, he's punching.
That's a compliment though, isn't it?
Yeah,
surely.
It is. But at the time when I was really insecure, I was like hiding the keywords punching on my YouTube channel. Like,
so
don't show me that. Don't show me that. But now I am so confident at 30 years of age. I'm so confident and happy with who I am that you can say whatever you want. And I genuinely, wholeheartedly, 100% do not care.
Love it.
Yeah.
What's interesting about that is, as well, you're talking about your granddad with such admiration there. And I love that story of him always like looking at your videos and being there and the numbers. You've obviously spoken about your mum. Can I ask about your dad as well? Because your dad had an interesting... Your dad went to prison for a bit, didn't he?
Yeah.
How was that for you at the time? What sort of age? Did you mind talking about
So I
period?
Went alive.
Right.
So he went to prison when he was super, super young. I'm not entirely sure like how old he was and stuff like that. We've only ever really spoken about it maybe twice. But yeah, when he was younger, so my dad's great. Like my dad is very honest and has instilled lessons in me that I'm proud of having. Yeah. So just like treat people how you want to be treated and like work ethic and stuff like that. And my dad has always had my back when it comes to my YouTube channel from day one. I remember my mum used to up my rent every time I'd make more money, and I was like, I can't live. And I'd go to like Top Man, buy a t-shirt. My mum would be like, why are you buying this when you can give it to me? And my dad would always find an excuse for me. So he'd go, well, he does YouTube videos. You need to look different in each one. Like,
love it.
And at the time, I didn't know where the YouTube channel was going. So there's no way he did.
Yeah.
But he always seemed to sort of back it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so when he was like late teens, he got in a fight outside a pub, and he punched this man that was a bit older, and probably 30s or something. And the man hit his head on the floor and he died. And that obviously eats my dad up, like,
cause, to this day.
Yeah, so he went to prison for manslaughter. He handed himself into the police. Like, he had to. I'm not saying that's a good thing. Obviously, it's a terrible thing what he did, but he, from that terrible thing, he handled it the best way he could in hindsight. Like, and if you meet my dad and you speak to him, like, that's a part of his life that he wholeheartedly regrets. Mm. Like, but because of that, like, my dad's from like East London, grew up in Thetford, which is a London overspill town. West Ham fan, bit of a geezer, but has always taught me, don't fight, don't fuck up your life like I fucked up mine. Like, and he said to me that he's so proud of everything I've got going on because he gets to live through that. Wow. So it was almost like, and it's almost like my dad might have messed up a big part of his life, but it's because of him that I've been able to have such a good life in a way.
And you're still close to him now, because obviously you said you don't talk to your mum now, is that right? But your dad, you still have a very close relationship with
him. Yeah, love him to bits. Like, it's mad, because like, one of the proudest moments of my life was giving him a West Ham season ticket. Or like,
amazing.
I've only seen my dad cry a handful of times, like these old boys often do.
Same here.
Right.
Yeah.
And one of them was when his nan, who was essentially his mum, he found out she had cancer. That was one time. And another time when I saw him got teary-eyed, and I don't know if he want me to say this, but is when I got the job at West Ham.
Really?
Presenting, wow. I remember I went to into his kitchen and just went, I'm got this contract with West Ham. And that's the proudest moment of my life. Not buying my house, not million subscribers, that's up there, but it was that. Yeah. It was that. And then I get to, when I'm filming with a West Ham players, much like you with pretty much any player, I'm inside, I'm still that 11-year-old seeing them at Upton Park.
Yeah, like, I see what you mean.
Dad took me to my first ever West Ham game when I was 16. I remember I opened my birthday card, and I need to give my mum some credit as well, because it would have been her as well, but West Ham tickets fell out of my card and I cried my eyes out. My dad took me to the game. It was under the floodlights at Upton Park, and we got there early, and we was like looking through the fence at the players car park. Teddy Sheringham was playing. I was Teddy, and he turned and waved. I went, Daddy, waved at me. And now I get to go, Dad, I've just presented West Ham's pre-season tour in Australia.
Amazing.
On the plane with the players.
Yeah.
Waking up and Jared Bowen's putting something in his locker, like, and then like,
and you think back to that moment, right?
Yeah. I'm still that kid at Upton Park, and the first thing I do every time is just like call my dad up. Or,
yeah, that's powerful.
Dad, I just did this with Declan Rice. I just did this, and that's not me.
Well, not anymore, because he's awesome. He's left. I know that you're gutted about that.
But that's not me flexing. Yeah. That's me, like, me and him are in awe of it.
No, I know exactly what you mean, because like, my dad's not a Spurs fan. He's a Wolves fan, randomly. The story being, he was in the Cubs scouts. He was a Wolf Cub fan. There was a team called Wolves and supported them. Really random reason, which is why me and my brothers all support different London teams. It's a bit of a nightmare when we were growing up. But he took me to my Spurs game. And I remember, again, fortunate enough to do some work with Tottenham and stuff. And I hosted the first game, the opening ceremony for the first game at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Unreal.
And my dad, I came down to watch, and even though he's not a Spurs fan, and there was a moment where I was on the screen sort of saying, welcome everyone to the first game at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I glanced up and saw my dad, and I had a flashback to the first time he took me to White Hart Lane as a kid. I was a Spurs fan, so he took me, even though he wasn't a Tottenham fan. He still wanted to make his son happy. He went there. And as I'm standing there, pitch side, sort of welcoming this Spurs fan base to the new stadium, I saw my dad, and I remembered the first time he took me up the steps to White Hart Lane. I said to myself, imagine I'd have said to my dad when I was 8, oh, you know, we're going to move to a new stadium in 20 years and I'm going to be hosting. It wouldn't even cross your mind that you'd have those opportunities. But it's like you said, to have those dreams and live those moments, that wasn't, I wouldn't say that's the biggest gig I've ever done, but it was one of the proudest gigs I've ever done, because you anything where you see that little boy in you, where you had dreams sort of fulfilling. We'll never fulfill our dreams of becoming a footballer. That's the ultimate.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, it's a down the ladder one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where you sort of go, wow. And actually,
100%.
To share those moments with your family, I know what you mean, are quite special.
100%, mate. Yeah. I bought a couple of tickets to, I was so lucky to find someone, but me and my dad went to Prague to watch West Ham.
I knew you'd get this in. We're talking about. I knew you'd get the cup final.
I was going to mention the word trophy, but I'm not sure you'd understand it.
Whenever I see Jack, he always seems to get in West Ham winning. Go on, talk to me about it then. But we won the Europa Conference League. Here we go.
Mickey Mouse competition, isn't it? I don't care if it is, mate. I'm sleeping in Mickey Mouse pyjamas for the rest of my life. But yeah, we were in the stadium. We watched Bowen put in that last minute winner. And
good finish, that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He's a top player, isn't he?
There's a few other players in that team, whereas if it fell to them, I'm not sure we'd have won that.
Top player, Joe.
Yeah, hell of a player.
I think he's underrated, you know.
Great guy as well.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? Really nice guy. But I feel like he's underrated in terms of like the comparable players to his position.
Like, we like it that way, West Ham fans, because
top player.
Look at Arsenal fans now. Get out. Yeah. Like they think, like they're acting like they've just discovered fire because of Declan Rice. Oh, he's well good. Well, yeah, we've been saying it for 4 years, mate.
So you were saying about the cup final.
Yeah,
when that
went in, don't get me wrong, there was alcohol involved, but I was in tears. Yeah. And I looked over, so was he. I was kissing him on the head, and we're not really like that. But it took me back, like very much like you said with your dad, it took me back to Floodlights, Upton Park, 2008.
That's a powerful moment, actually, in terms of celebrating, because brother is Arsenal, brother is Chelsea, and older half brother is Watford. My dad's Wolves, and we actually said once that we've never had we went to a Euros game when England went to the final. We all went to a Euros game. It was England Germany, amazing game, 2-0 when England won it was the second round game, wasn't it? And then they got to the final,
wasn't it?
I think Ukraine was the
quarters,
and then Denmark was the semis. But it was the Germany game, and all my family ran. And I turned to my brother and was like, that's the first time we've celebrated a goal together, because he's an Arsenal fan, I'm a Tottenham fan. Yeah. So it's like we never have that moment. So it's actually really nice to share that as a family, like external moments. But I know exactly what you mean. So working for West Ham now, then, that's up there as one of your proudest moments.
Yeah, I love it. Because I will never ever take it for granted. Yeah. And it doesn't matter how sort of professional or level-headed I try and be around those players. You can bet your bottom dollar when I'm in the car, I'm looking back at the selfies. And
Jared's going, Jack, we've had 4 selfies already today. Again, we haven't actually spoken about, which I think we need to get into, your transition from YouTube to podcast. Mm-hmm. Happy Hour Podcast is absolutely flying. You've done, over 400 episodes now?
400 episodes, 240 guests.
Wow.
We're getting close to, I think we're getting close to 100 million downloads.
Wow.
Yeah.
So tell me about that transition then, because you were at a point where over a million subscribers on YouTube, that stopped. How did the podcast come about? Because people listening now, almost like YouTube was, everyone wants a podcast, even I'm starting a podcast now myself. So how did that come about and why did you want to do that?
I've always wanted to interview people. I wanted my own chat show when I was younger. I went to college. I studied interview techniques. First person I interviewed was my granddad. He came in and I had to interview him in front of all the classmates at college. And then I'd started podcasts before. I had one called the Jackmate Podcast. 2017 started that. The main reason is because I'm a huge, growing up as a huge Ricky Gervais fan.
Yeah.
And I used to listen to his old radio shows on XFM with Steve Merchant and Carl Pilkington.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved the dynamic, thought it was well funny. Probably didn't get into him at the time because I was only about 8, but growing up I'd listen to the repeats and stuff. And then he brought out the Ricky Gervais podcast. And anything Ricky Gervais does, I'll do.
So he was your inspiration. Which I sort of see with you, like comedy. I almost see you as comedy more than football and ends, because that's your background in entertainment. 100%. Would you say he's a big part of the success? Because he was, I mean, you get massive guests on now. Don't take this the wrong way. Mm-hmm. But you had Ricky Gervais, who is, I think it's fair to say, A-list, isn't he? I mean, you had him on very early though, didn't you?
Had him on the old podcast, the previous one at the YouTube. But he's been on the new one since. Yeah. But it's weird because there's a bit of a meme in my listenership, like with the Happy Hour fans, that Jack's talking about Gervais again. But I do owe him so much. Like, he probably won't even realise, because I'll tell you how it came about, right? This is incredible. So he followed me on Twitter randomly.
Yeah.
I had a night out to celebrate. I was that excited.
Because he followed you?
Yeah, because he followed me. And I was like, I'm not going to DM him. And then after about a year, he brought back the David Brent character for the Life on the Road film.
Yes, yeah.
And I'd done a couple press junkets before that. So I kind of knew how they worked at this point. And I was like, he'll be doing a press junket for this. I'll DM him. So originally I knew somebody that was an agent of his. So I emailed, any chance I can come to a press junket, 5 minutes, YouTube channel clip, done. We're all full. No problem. So I was like, right. So went to Fiona. She went, why don't you DM him? I went, I can't DM the big man. She went, yeah, you can. So I DM'd him after a few days. I said,
oh, Ricky, I love you.
And he came up blocked. I was like,
14th message today.
But I was like, hi, mate. Would love to interview you to promote Life on the Road, blah, blah, blah. But you're full on the junket day. He said, who said we are full? I was like, well, I'm not going to throw anyone
under the
bus.
Yeah, that's a tough one to answer, isn't it?
But it was this guy at this email. And he said...
John@RickyGervais.com.
And so he said... I think his manager's actually called John.
Other Johns exist. Don't want to get me libeled or anything.
But he said, yeah, come down at the end of the day. So he was at this, you know how they work, these junkets. Like,
yeah, for anyone that doesn't, because I've been to a lot of them, the actors, comedians, whoever is the star of said show, film, podcast... They have 5 minutes with the world's media and you get a 5 minute slot and there's 15 other people there.
Conveyor
and you're
belt,
in and out very quickly.
Yeah. And that's bang on. But he said, come at the end of the day, posh hotel in London. He said, but bring your own cameras. So I was like, that's not really how they work, is it? They're usually set up and you get a memory card, take that away. Yeah. And so I turn up, I'm in this side room and I took my mate Tom Norris, who I was doing the podcast with, and who later we went on to interview, which was a nice full circle. But at this point, I'd never met him. And we're in this side room and Gervais walks in and we've got the camera set up and I go, hi, Ricky, nice to meet you. And he goes, I go, how long you got? And he goes, how long is it going to take? And I thought, do I say 5 minutes? Mm. I went, 20 minutes? Yeah, fine. I was like, 20 minutes? Sat down on the sofa and it was the worst start I could have ever imagined because I went, I'm here with my best mate, Ricky Gervais, because I was playing up to the whole fact that I just rip him off on everything. Yeah. And I put my arm around him, tried to move him in, and he didn't move. So I went, and just sat there like that. And I started to panic, and you can hear it in my voice, and the video's still on YouTube. And I started to panic, and then just out of nowhere, I just pulled out this fucking great interview. Yeah. I just, in my head, I thought, you're messing up the biggest opportunity of your life right now.
Interesting.
And then I just went, right, just be funny. Just do something. And then I just thought, right, I'm not gonna dwell on that moment anymore. Yeah. I'm just gonna, and it went super well. He was laughing, I was laughing. We left. I went outside with my mate Tom Norris. We was packing the stuff away. Tom looked at me, just went, smashed it. Give me a hug.
Brilliant.
Tears in my eyes. I was on the train home, get a DM from Gervais. That was fun, we'll do that again. So then fast forward a couple of years, he comes on the podcast. He invited me on his show.
Yeah.
And I started this new podcast, Happy Hour, new at the time and now done 5 years. Sent him a message, will you come on? No problem. Rocks up, does it. And once you get a name like Ricky Gervais on your podcast, you can use that as show people like Jack White, or do you want to come on?
So without Ricky Gervais, you might not have got Jack White, for instance. Yeah.
Exactly. That opened the floodgates for people.
That's what we're doing with you, this podcast. Now we get Ricky Gervais next week. Is he free Tuesday? But that is important, isn't it? It goes back to what I think I've learned from this chatting to you is that your work ethic, you've gone 7 years grafting without money, but knowing that you've got something to offer people. Same with the podcast. You know, you're utilising your contacts. You've almost like taken every opportunity that you've had and run with it in everything you've done, really.
Yeah, and I think if you don't have a genuine passion for what you're doing and you'll go into it because the motivating factor is money, you will fail more often than not because you won't keep up to it. Would I be sat here if, for those 7 years, like if I didn't have a genuine passion for it for those 7 years, would I have kept going? No.
Yeah.
Even if I was getting paid a little bit, like I wouldn't have carried on doing it. You need a passion. I have people come up, and another bit of advice is just start your project.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I get people come up to me on nights out and they'd go, oh, I'm thinking about doing a podcast. And I'm like, talk to me when you start the podcast.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I've had this idea for something, but I don't want to get it off the ground. Or a lot of people say fear of failure. It's like, I always think, well, you don't know if it's going to fail unless you try.
And you're already failing by not doing it.
Yeah, and I always think that people regret, and it is difficult because it is a saturated market, I get that. But I always think you're I think you're more likely to regret things in life that you don't try than things that you have tried. Because if you try something, it doesn't work, at least you've got, well, at least I gave it a go. Whereas if you don't try, you will never know.
Exactly. And imagine that regret. I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
Well, when you buy a lottery ticket, you don't really think I'm going to win.
No.
You think I've just wasted a quid, but I could win. Well, that's the same way if you start a project.
Yeah.
Let's be honest about it as well. If you start a project, there is a big chance that that won't go anywhere and you will fail. But right now, there's a 0% chance that it won't go anywhere and you are already failing. Yeah. So why don't you buy that lottery ticket? Why don't you turn that camera on, start that podcast, text your mate, do you want to do this? I have... We recently went on tour and every night we'd go out to stage door and meet people, and it was so surreal. And I reckon through the month that we were touring, I probably had about 8 or 9 people come up to me and say, "I've got a podcast, I want you to come on." And I'd say to it, or "I'm thinking of starting one," and I don't care who they are, I don't care what numbers they are. I give them my email and I say, "When you get to 30 episodes, I'll come on." I say that every time.
Why 30?
Because then you're committed then. You're not just done free and earned no
right,
money.
I say you're giving them a drive to start a pod.
Get to 30 episodes and then I will come on. Like, and that's not me saying like, oh, I can change it for you. Chances are you'll get me on your podcast. It might get a few more listens, but it's not going to change the game. Like, I'm not Ricky Gervais. But if you, like, if to anyone that wants me on, I'll come on. Yeah. I'll sit down and chat, but actually do it. I don't want somebody to start a podcast, get me on, and then just bin it off.
No, I know what you mean. So, you've got to have that drive. And it's when you can't get a guest or you can't get a studio or editor. It's actually having things in plan launch when you've got 3 or 4 in the can and things like that. Which brings me nicely on to the start for you then, really. So you were having a conversation. I mean, how did it actually materialize you starting a podcast? And because obviously you've got, I mean, I've been on it, banging studio, editors. I mean, from where you started to where you are now, talk to me about that process.
Yes, it's mad. It was just me and my mate Tom Norris. We used to just bring a couple mics. We'd record in Clapham in this tiny little shed, much like the tinfoil roof that I put on the pigsty. And like, we were doing one with Will and E.
Yeah.
And it started to like rain heavily.
Yeah.
And we just couldn't use any of the footage because it was like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's weird how over time it progressed. I'd be lying if I said that like Spotify buying the rights to the podcast didn't change the game for me.
Explain for people that don't know that, because you're a Spotify exclusive podcast now, so it can only be found on Spotify.
Yeah.
But with that comes financial brand recognition, I imagine, help with guests. Talk to us about what you mean by that's changed the game for you.
So my motivating factor behind signing with Spotify, whether they want me to say it or not, is money.
Solely.
That was money, right? Because at the time I was going to, bear in mind my YouTube channel was petering out at this point. Mm. So I had money, but I needed financial security.
Yeah.
Me and my mate Stevie, who worked in Boots, we were just doing it and I was paying him a wage, and my fiance Fiona, she was editing for it, and there was no real way to make this financially viable.
Right.
And Spotify come knocking, because we were getting good numbers, which I'm so will eternally be super grateful for, everyone out there who listened from the start. And they said, right, we'll give you X amount of money for this to be a Spotify exclusive. So you can't get it on Apple Podcasts, you can't get it on any other providers, just on there. And I'd be lying if I said like the first thing you do is just scroll down the contract, what money are you offering me?
Really, yeah.
Right? And I've always been honest with my audience, and that was like, okay, cool. Then you start to think about other things. So is there anything I can't say on Spotify? Because the humor's pretty out there anyway.
Yeah.
Like, don't be liable. But apart from that, you can joke about whatever you want. Mm. So it's like, all right, fine, that's good. We can help you get guests. Brilliant.
Wow, that's huge, isn't it?
That's the second biggest factor. Yeah.
And has that materialized in terms of like guests that they've helped with?
We've got Johnny Knoxville from Jackass.
Wow.
So he was in London for 2 days and we got that slot.
There's been
plenty others, but above that as well, like working with Spotify has genuinely been great, and I would be the first one to say if it hadn't. So long may that continue.
But I have heard that from other people as well. I imagine the benefits are there.
You can use their studio whenever you want.
Yeah.
You can go down there. There's other events they invite me and Stevie to. The networking's been great. I said to my power who works at Spotify, like, I want to go to, we've not announced it yet, but we'll be going to a different country at some point and getting loads of guests over there.
Oh, cool.
And he was like, pretty much sorted that out straight away. And yeah, so it has been good. But let's be honest, the money changed everything. Mm. So because of that, I can now pay Robbie, Stevie, Alfie, my fiance Fiona, and we all just do it as a team.
And you put them all on board because they're all essentially mates, or like your partner, like you said, Fiona, they've all come on board because of the Spotify money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Stevie, like I keep saying, was working in Boots. He came on. I said, right, you can go full-time with this now. Mm. So he goes full-time, became an internet personality in his own right.
Yeah.
An esports company reached out to him. He now works with them. And everyone's just got their own stuff going on.
That must make you proud as well, actually, to like give back to essentially your loved ones and the people that are really close to you, that you can, like, little things, I don't know if people know, but you obviously live in Norwich and your studio's in East London. Mm-hmm. You all drive down together.
Yeah.
It's like with your fiance and your best mate.
Yeah.
And then you go back and you go to a pub.
It's not so good.
I mean, that side of it you must love. And you've been able to build something that you've chosen who you want to, because you could have got an array of editors, producers to come on board who are very skilled in that. But was it something that you always wanted to sort out those around you?
Yeah. If you get people in your team that are your mates and that love you, they will always have your back. Mm. And that, I don't just mean that in terms of disputes and stuff like that, but in terms of the product, in terms of the work. Fiona, she's up till 5 a.m. the day before an upload, making sure every little bit is, if someone sniffs, she'll cut that out. She'll take time to cut that out. She wants that to be the best product because it's her product as well. And I can't stress that enough. Like, you get people who care about you, you will get the best product for it. We have a guy called Sam who I'll give a little shout out to. He ran an Instagram page for Happy Hour and posted loads of fan pictures, and he is next level, this guy, the stuff he makes. And I just got in contact with him and was like, why are you doing this fan page? Like, just do the official one. So now I give him the login to the Happy Hour.
Wow.
And now he runs it. I'll chuck him a bit of cash. And then we had a guy called Josh, who's a graphic designer, on our Reddit forum. He posted a poster that he made of us, the podcast. I got in contact with him. I went, is anyone paying you to do these? He was like, no, I'm a graphic designer, but I'm only 16. I was like, well, I'm paying you weekly then. So these, because they care.
That's a great bit of advice as well for people listening to this, that because we want this to be inspirational, not just for people who want to be on screen or be a YouTuber, but that there's a huge skill set in graphic design, in editing, in producing, in directing, camera ops. It's such a wide ranging industry. And I've always said the best way to get somewhere, rather than just send a CV, is actually to show what you can do. And I've always said this, is that people ask me all the time, how to become a presenter? How do I do this? And I always say, show us what you can do. And people go, well, I don't have a camera. We've all got a camera on our iPhone. Vlog yourself going to a game. You know, vlog yourself doing an interview with your mate. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be in a room with Steven Gerrard or with four HD cameras. And I think it's the same with you. If you're into graphic design, show us what you can do, because you've literally given someone paid work because of something they've sent as a fan, and you're now paying people, almost employing people, whether it's full-time, part-time is irrelevant, but you're giving them an opportunity based on them being proactive. So that's important as well, isn't it? Being proactive.
Show your work. Don't just tell us what you can do. Show it. And like, obviously don't just work for free. Like, people out there could get exploited by companies that are like, if you just come on for 2 weeks and show us what you can do, then we'll go from there. Well, more often than not, they'll take your work and then that'll be that. But this guy's taken it upon himself to show, just go, like, I've made this. And people have made lots of stuff in the past and I haven't then gone to them and given them money. But he didn't apply for a job or anything like that. He's just come, shown what he can do, and that's led to something.
Yeah, it's great advice. I think being proactive, I think it's so important. Mate, got some quick fire questions about your podcast.
Okay.
Best guest you've ever had on?
It's a tough one. Do you mean in terms of, I know it's quick fire, but do you mean who gave the best interview?
Yes,
or who,
not the biggest name, the best guest.
There's 20 I could pick. Joe Wilkinson, I think, is the funniest
Joe Wilkinson,
guy we've
had on the podcast. Because you had a lot of comedians. Joe Wilkinson, the funniest you've ever had.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Biggest name you've ever had on the pod. So I'm talking just biggest name celebrity.
Ricky Gervais, Johnny Knoxville. But I'm gonna go Mark Noble.
You love Mark Noble, don't you?
I love
West him. Okay, Mark Noble is more famous than Ricky Gervais, according to Jack, mate. I love that. Most nervous you've ever been about an episode?
We booked Jeremy Corbyn in the height of his campaign, and that was huge. And I was nervous because politics ain't my bag. And I was sat in the chair, and we were ready to go, and they cancelled on us 5 minutes before we were due to do it.
5 minutes?
5 minutes. His aide was outside our office calling us because he'd just done like the Jeremy Vine show or the Jeremy Marsh show or whatever it is, and he'd been torn a new one.
Okay.
And he had to go back to the office for damage control.
Wow.
But I was nervous for that. Or Mark Noble.
Come back to Mark Noble. So you never, the Corbyn podcast never happens. So you were gutted about that.
It was scripted, booked, ready to go. Didn't happen.
Gutted, wow. Yeah. And Mark Noble, sorry, as well, just to clarify. Mm. Most viewed episode?
Most viewed episode, Stephen Tries is up there.
Yeah.
Again, that was in the height of the F2 drama, so we spoke about that. So, let's go that one.
Okay, Stephen Tries. Worst moment doing the pod? Now, I'm not asking for worst guests because...
I'll tell you.
I don't want to think on that. But worst moment, anything that's gone wrong or... And again, it could be a technical aspect for those, that something we wouldn't know about.
Okay. Worst moment we had... we've had episodes before where we've done the whole episode and then we've looked and it hasn't recorded to the memory card. Yeah, that's
the whole episode.
Whole episode. We had Zach and Jay from the Zach and Jay show, Zach Allsop. We had them boys on. We did an hour and a half and then realised it weren't recorded.
Oh, no.
And they are such legends. We recorded the whole thing again.
Did you?
Yeah,
wow. Right then and there. Said, who's that? Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah. We couldn't get him again.
And do you know Tom Skinner, Bosch?
Yeah, of course I do, Bosch.
Yeah, he come on recently. And
how many times did you say Bosch?
Too many, to be honest. It was annoying. No, I'm joking.
He's a big West Ham fan, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a legend, mate. Yeah. He's class. But he came on and our cameras showing up on the, there's big screens here behind the cameras, it said set the clock on the screen,
right?
We'd run a test with set the clock and it came up and the set the clock was not on it. I was like, right. that just says it on the screen. You see how it says camera one here,
behind the camera we've got the same
I was
thing.
Like that well, that'll be fine. For some reason it's imprinted in the footage. I don't even know how that makes sense. So we have Tom Skinner's episode with set the clock across his face and I just had to call him up and apologise. So in the end, we just put a yellow box over it and put captions coming up in the middle.
Just put Bosch ahead of it. Could have got away with it. But dream guest. If you could have one guest that you've never had on from any field of life.
Mm-hmm. I would go for my favourite comedian, American guy called Bo Burnham.
Dream guest, yeah?
Love him, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's a guy that had a panic attack on stage, and that later happened to me.
Tell me about this, because this is something you've said no one knows about, but this happened on tour, right?
Yeah. Is this still Quickfire?
No, sorry, yeah. That is, fortunately, the end of Quickfire. Should I have had any more Quickfire?
No, that was good, mate.
Okay. It does bring me nicely onto the tour, because obviously you took your podcast on tour nationwide. Go on, big yourself up here. How many dates? How many people? It was pretty special, wasn't it?
I think we did 31 dates across the UK. We'd done it over two legs. First leg sold out. Second leg, we did a bit too close to leg one, so didn't quite sell out.
good advice for people. Yeah. Second leg, yeah.
But we did.
But all over the country, sell out.
Apollo in Manchester.
What's the capacity of that?
3,000, something like that. It was crazy. We did some crazy venues. Yeah.
What was the buzz like for that in terms of being in front of 3,000 compared to doing YouTube in a podcast? Because it's completely different, right?
With my mate from Boots. Like, it's weird.
Boots is get other chemists to do exist on. There's a lot of brand love for Boots here. Shout out Superdrug. How did that compare though? Because that must have been unbelievable.
Mate. So the first show we did was the Birmingham Alexander. I think that's 1,200 people. And it's probably the most nervous I've ever been in my life. Yeah. I remember it was like the scene from 8 Mile when Eminem's about to go out on stage rapping. And he looks in the mirror and he's like...
powerful scene there.
Yeah. And I was looking in the mirror just like, you have to smash it. Yeah. You have to do it. But yeah, it was incredible, mate.
Yeah, incredible. But you did have a moment that you said was quite worrying that you haven't told before.
Never told this story, haven't said it on my podcast, anything like that. But we did we played Dublin and the crowd were incredible. They were the by far the maddest crowd we had on the tour. It was a party atmosphere. I believe it was a Friday night and they were like, it was like a football crowd in there, so we like to drink with Stevie, just making Stevie drink. And the show went amazing. And at the end of the show, we had this bit that we did every night. We made it seem like it was unique to the show. But we did this bit where I mugged my mate off the whole time. And then we pull out a stool at the end. And I go, I just want to say a quick message to somebody who means something to me in this room tonight. And then it goes silent. Mm. And then I go, Stevie, just sit here. And Stevie comes out and he sits there. And I I read this sort of monologue about him, and I go like, I know I give you a lot of shit, but you're honestly one of my best mates. Yeah. I couldn't do this without you. And it's a nice heartfelt moment,
yeah.
which then leads, and then I go, and because of this, I've written you this song. And then this song comes on, it's basically yeah. calling him a
okay.
It's just stupid. Okay. As I'm doing this monologue, it's meant to go really quiet, but the crowd just keep cheering. And I'm getting like pent up thinking about it. The feeling that I had, I felt like I'd lost the room. Like I was going, guys, we just got to do this.
Right.
And because the whole joke is that I'm going to be well nice and then call him the most awful thing in the world.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you don't,
but you need the crowd to be involved in that.
Yeah,
and they're not playing ball.
I need you to feel like this is a touching moment.
Right, okay,
so when we do this stupid song, it's not going to hit.
Yeah.
And so I'm going, guys, and then I talk about, there's a little bit about mental health in there, about how Stevie helped me and mine. And I'm going, I'd call you up no matter what, and they're just all chanting. I'm like, guys, I appreciate it, like you're incredible, but just and then that moment I felt like I'd lost the crowd, even though they were being great, and I'm not slagging them off. That was one of our best crowds. But I started to, I felt this, I didn't know what was happening, I felt this like fear in me, and I so my lips started going, and managed to get through it, did this song, jumping up and down. And I got off stage, and as soon as I got off stage, I looked at Robbie and Stevie, the other two guys on the pod, and they were going, that was incredible. And I just went, I hated it. I hated that last 5 minutes. Again, to no fault of the crowd. But And then I went upstairs, and like I said, we'd always go out to the stage door and meet people about 20 minutes after. I had to sit there, and I said to tour manager Luke, can you get me a fan? And he got me a fan, he put it in my face, and I had a little side room. I was shaking, and I had a full-on panic attack.
Really?
And I'd had like little things before, but never to that extent. And I didn't go out to the stage door for about an hour. And I probably missed a few people that night. It was the only night I didn't really go out. And when I went out, a lot of people had gone. And I couldn't do it. And when I went out, I remember this Irish fella coming up to me, and he went, you don't look too well, Jack. And I went, I don't feel too well. But no one there knew that was happening. And it was Bo Burnham, the comedian that I talk about. He does a whole bit in his stand-up routine about how he stopped performing because he started getting panic attacks on stage. So if it wasn't for him even joking about it, I wouldn't have known what was happening in that moment.
Really?
Because even though I had a panic attack, I was able to sort of coast through.
Because you'd seen him talk about that.
I was like, I know what this is.
And on the stage, so very relatable to what was going on with you.
Mm.
Has that happened to you since or beforehand? Is that the first time that's happened
to
you?
I'd had a couple before, but they was always brought on by me drinking and stuff.
Right.
Like when I went in a good headspace. Never. Always in bad times, never in the best of times like that. But that's probably why comedy's so great, because even Bo Burnham making a joke about it, you can help heal you, can't you?
Amazing that. and some of the other untold stories on tour, any that you can share that we might not know, just give us a flavor of. You had a tour bus, didn't you? Personalized tour bus,
a tour bus with our faces on it.
I know. Was that something you said? It had to be in the ride, or I need my face on the bus. It's not happening. Because that's not very you, is it? You're quite like, you don't mind not being in the limelight kind
of
guy.
Right. But we.
It was a big shot of your face. I saw it.
Yeah, we was with a sheep. We had a sheep on it.
Yeah.
That was quite funny. We said to the. We were getting our posters done for the. And they were like, what's the name of the tour? And we called it the Round Sheep
Round
Tour.
Sheep,
for reasons I won't bore you with. But Robbie Knox went. But essentially, we just wanted a sheep. And we went, can we get a sheep? Like a live sheep? Next thing we know, we got a live sheep there. Like an acting sheep as well. Lives on a farm of animals that go in TV. So there was, I said to the guy who brought this sheep, I was like, what other animals do you have? He went, I got a bucket of leeches. I went, how often do you need them? He said, I'll call the midwife. So some guy come in with like leeches on.
Really?
I was like, use real leeches. That's mad. But we had a sheep. He was called Rooney. He's dead now, probably.
Right.
Send one up.
Okay. Sorry to hear that about the sheep, by the way. I mean, amazing. Any plans for another tour?
Yeah, I reckon so. Mate. Yeah, no concrete plans, but it was the best time of our lives.
And again, just sharing it with your mates.
I
love that. Just finally, a few ones to end it. I think you've touched on this, but is there a best moment of your career so far? You've obviously mentioned Mark Noble being your dream guest and making your family proud, but is there one moment that you'd highlight as being your most proud moment so far, would you say?
Ricky Gervais' first interview, story I told, or Mark sitting across from Mark Noble for those 2 hours.
Okay. What's coming up next for you?
Just more podcasts, mate. More podcasts. Hopefully going to take those podcasts abroad as well and get some guests from overseas.
Oh, sounds like you've signed something, but you can't quite reveal what you've signed.
Potentially.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, okay, we'll find out in a bit when the camera stopped rolling. What do you think you'd be doing if you weren't doing YouTube and podcasts? I'm intrigued to know.
I don't know, mate. Throwing cream over people in Bella Italia, probably.
The Italian, yeah. Just finally, we asked this to all our guests. Advice for people that want to be the next Jack, mate.
Don't. I'm a twat. but no.
Thank you, Jack. No, go on.
Just start. Start your thing. Start your project. Start your podcast. 99% of the time, you're going to fail. But right now, you've got 100% chance of failure. So just start it.
I like that. Jack, it's been an absolute pleasure catching up with you as always.
Thank you, mate.
Mate, top man. I wish you all the best for everything you got going on.
Nice one. You too, mate. Thank you.